Your dreams are bigger, bolder, and more badass than the life you're living now, but something just keeps getting in the way. Join certified coach and former therapist Diane Wingert for the Driven Woman podcast. She'll show you how to get rid of whatever is holding you back so you can stop spinning your wheels and up-level your life. Get ready to hop in and buckle up. This is the Driven Woman podcast, and we're heading for the fast lane.
Well, hey, and welcome back to my fellow driven women. I have been on the lookout for very successful entrepreneurs who have ADHD, and I've been finding them. Today's interview with just such a woman is so inspiring to me because my special guest today is Angela Proffitt. First of all, you have just got to love that last name for an entrepreneur. But she describes herself as a Southern gal with a potty mouth. So in addition to loving her last name, I was completely taken with her self-description and knew I would love her instantly. Angela is the founder and CEO of Angela Proffitt LLC, a consulting firm out of Nashville. She is a productivity consultant, speaker, author, course creator, podcaster, an eight-figure serial entrepreneur. This isn't even her first business. And a driven woman with ADHD. She has a fascinating story that includes competitive gymnastics in childhood, accidentally starting her first business as a wedding planner, working so hard that she almost was on the verge of burnout, and now she is in complete control of her time, her money, her energy, her talent, her life. Angela Proffitt just may be one of the most inspiring women I've met, with or without ADHD, and whether you are an entrepreneur or not, you are going to learn a ton from this very lively conversation. This week's pod praise comes from Gal Friday 612, who says, "Give this show a listen, ADHD or no." Diane cuts to the heart of the topic at hand. No fluff, no filler, just concentrated, exactly what you need to hear. The podcast feels like sitting down for an intimate chat with your friend who always gives the best advice to get you unstuck. Well, Gal Friday 612, thank you for your review. And it sounds like we're hitting the mark with you because that's exactly what we aim to do. To inspire, to motivate, to inform, maybe entertain a little bit, but to let you know that if there's a gap between where you are and where you want to be, you can get there. I can't wait to share my fascinating conversation with the one and only Angela Proffitt. I know you're going to love it. Here we go. I have been looking forward to like a crazy person because my guest today, Angela Proffitt, you got to love that last name. First and foremost, Proffitt, hello. But besides that, she is a several times over author, a fellow podcaster, a consultant, a speaker, the list goes on, and a content creator. But in addition, and what you're really going to love, is she's a super successful eight-figure entrepreneur who has a brain just like yours and mine. Yes, ma'am, she has ADHD. And I connected with Angela online. I have been on her podcast. I'm loving up all of her content. You have to follow her everywhere she can be found. And today, we're going to bust through some of the myths, misunderstandings, and limiting beliefs that you have that you could never, in your wildest dreams, become someone like her because you freaking can. So welcome, my friend. I'm so excited for this conversation.
I have been so excited, like you, looking forward to it on my calendar. I'm like, one more day, tomorrow, yay, it's here. I'm excited.
Yay. And you know what? And this is what, here's something right from the get-go. Angela doesn't have power right now. Her laptop is draining its battery, but she freaking showed up. Okay, so I just want to say, like, how many times do we feel an inconvenience coming on and think, oh no, this isn't going to work. I can't do this. And so we bail. But somebody like Angela doesn't bail. She powers through. And I think that's, you know, that's why she's resilient. That's why she's successful. So can we go back to I know you grew up in the South. In fact, on your webpage, I love that it says you're a Southern gal with a potty mouth. I'm like, I'm in love already. This is so awesome because I don't have to worry about the explicit rating on my podcast and I don't have to censor myself. But besides that, you grew up kind of sheltered, and you, like me, were never exposed to you never learned about entrepreneurship growing up. And I think a lot of people say, well, how could I be an entrepreneur? I don't know any entrepreneurs. I've never known any entrepreneurs. But you had the same beginning. So can we start with that? Like, how did you even get into self-employment?
Yeah. Well, so my dad was an undercover drug agent for 30-something years. And so we were very sheltered. And my dad worked for the same company for 32 years. My mom was a stay-at-home mom with three kids. But my uncle, my family lived on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, so like 8 hours away. But for vacation, we would go to see my grandparents and the aunts and the uncles. And my uncle owned a wedding venue for 35 years. And so I remember growing up in the event and wedding and design. And he started as a florist. And you know, when you're around something as a kid, you just pick up on stuff. And I didn't really realize that that would like carry into adulthood. Like I never saw myself being in the creative industry at all. I loved people and I loved helping people. Like people drove my passion every day. And so I went to school to be a psychologist. I worked in mental health. I worked in an AIDS clinic. I worked in a morgue. And then I recruited subspecialists for the hospital for about 5 years as a contractor. But when I worked in mental health for about a year, and then I realized, shit, this is not what I thought it was going to be. And growing up,
How was it different? Because you know, I was a therapist for many years. Yes. Before transitioning into coaching and consulting. And a lot of women with ADHD are drawn into helping professions. But how is it different than what you expected?
Well, the first thing is like, because I was so sheltered, and I did, I grew up around a bunch of men and DEAs who every other word was a cuss word.
So, that explains a few things.
Yeah, I just, you know, you get what you see. Like what comes in my head, you're going to hear it. And I'm just, you'll never have to worry or feel like you don't know where you are with me. Like you're going to know. And you know, that came from my dad. And so I attribute it to being a little bit sheltered, not understanding that there were so many mentally ill people dealing with things just in everyday adult world. But then studying it and then going and doing practicums and internships, I do think that it was probably the place that I chose to do my last 6 months of clinical rotations. And there was a lockdown facility on the third floor. I don't know why they would put them on the third floor. There was an adolescence, which most of those kids did not have any mental illnesses. They were in the state's custody and their parents were in jail on drugs. They couldn't locate them. So, you know, so it was a whole different situation. And then we had a partial unit, and which meant those were the people that had just suffered a major tragedy. They were suicidal for a little bit, but they were stable enough to go home at night and on the weekends, but they could end up upstairs. So I rotated in three different areas for about 6 months, and I worked there for about a year. And just being, it's just a lot. It's a lot. And I thought I was going to be able to go into this and help people. But then I started to see, you know, when you get inside of an industry, and there's a few like very vivid things I remember and things that you see. And I'm just like, holy shit. Like, I'm not going to be able to help these people. They are really sick.
Because of the system and because of just how impaired they were.
Everything. Like they were so sick. Some of them did not take their medication. Some didn't have the family support. Some were, didn't have the insurance. It was just, it made me ill. I mean, I literally cried. I would call my parents walking because my uncle had a condo on the beach. That's where I lived. And then it was like 4 blocks to the hospital. So I would walk to work every day. And I would call my parents on the way when I would walk back just crying and telling them about all these sick people. But there were two really significant things that happened, like two patients, a six-year-old little boy. We were in a therapy session and I was just there to shadow and take notes. And his mom came in to see him and they were getting ready to go back to court. And this was the final court date where clearly the mother was on meth. She was on, it was awful.
And the state was taking custody
yes,
of this kid.
Yeah. And so he looked at the psychiatrist that I was training under and said, and he kept saying, the little kid kept saying like, "Mommy, I'm so sorry. I'm not there to make you breakfast. Mommy, I'm so sorry that I'm not there to help you eat." Like things that a six-year-old should not be saying to a parent. So, you know, we're documenting all that. And then the psychiatrist said, you know, talked about the court date, and he was trying to like prep the child and talk to the child like you should. Mm-hmm. And he got in his face and he said, "If you take me away from my mommy, I will find where you live and I will kill you." This is like a six-year-old.
Dang.
And I'm just like, shit, okay. So that was the first thing that I'm like, I don't think I can do this. And then a few months later, we had a patient that was in partial. And this is where I go back to, you never, ever judge a book by its cover. You never know what's going on with someone or what happened to them either that morning or even the night before. You don't know.
Good rule of thumb.
And this woman, her name was Jane, beautiful woman, beautiful husband, beautiful daughter, amazing, like expensive, nice cars, her clothing, her purse, her shoes. I didn't know that much about like high-end brands then because like I hadn't experienced the luxury market yet. But I just knew that like you could just tell the way she walked. Like mm-hmm. they were extremely wealthy. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, what is wrong with you? Like, why are you here?
What are you doing?
And then she comes into partial and she starts telling, she was bipolar, schizophrenic, you know, and that started to come out in my head. I'm like, holy shit, this lady is crazy. I mean, you never say that, but no. I'm just like, I really don't know
but
how.
Your thought bubble was very colorful, probably.
Very. I'm like, yeah. How are we going to help
What's
you?
Happening?
Like, you're all over the place. And so we worked with her for months, probably about, I would say 4 months. I'm bad with time, but she had a suicide episode over a weekend. And so they put her in inpatient. And it was my role to go and see her and talk to her and say, "What were you thinking? Tell me what happened." You know, I was supposed to document it all. And again, I had seen her every single day, Monday through Friday, for months. And she looked at me and said, "Who are you?" And I took it so personal. And so I went home that night and I called my mom. I'm like, "I can't do this anymore." Like I thought like we were getting somewhere with this lady and then she tried to commit suicide and now she's, I'm like, "Mama, she didn't remember who I was. Like, how can you not remember somebody that's been there for months and months in all your therapy sessions?" Like, I just took it. I was so young and I took it so personal. I'm like, I'm moving home. Like I'm moving back to Nashville. Mm-hmm. And that's when my parents are super involved in the Catholic diocese. Mm-hmm. And at the time, their friends' kids were getting married. They knew me. My sister knew how to decorate just from our uncle's business. And so we just started decorating church weddings for free, for fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We did it for fun for like 2 years. And then that, and y'all, social media, we didn't even have the internet at home back then. Like my ass was in the library. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I don't even like books because I'm not a good reader because I don't retain what I read. Thank God for Audible.
Thanks, ADHD.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So it's just, you know, and that's when I started to really just, I knew I had to understand. I didn't really know I was starting a business. So, cause I was just doing her fun. And I didn't need the money. Like I had a good job and I was a competitive mm-hmm. gymnast and I taught gymnastics at night. So y'all, I've always had like 3 jobs. Like I could never not be doing a lot of different things. So even from, I started coaching gymnastics when I was 13, I couldn't even drive. And, you know, I was in the gym and you and I talked about this on my podcast. Like that was one of the things that I think really did teach me discipline and how to short-term focus and how to work hard. And when you do the same thing over and over, you're going to get better at it. So I'm very thankful my parents like had me in sports.
The advantage of that and gymnastics in particular, Angela, what I've come to learn from working exclusively with women like us for the last number of years is the ones that become really successful, such a high percentage of them have had a competitive gymnastics or swimming background as a child. The discipline, the consistency, the delayed gratification, the pride in accomplishment, the resiliency of failing and trying again and failing and trying again, the understanding that you have to rely on others in order to succeed. You can't do everything yourself. You have constant feedback on your strengths and your limitations. I mean, the advantage is so significant that I think it should, any kid who gets diagnosed with ADHD, their parents should immediately put them into a competitive athletic environment. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. Not that it has to be older I get, the more my joints are like, yeah, I still don't like it. Even if I could go back, like, I still don't regret it. My nieces, one of them is now competing and, you know, it's meet season right now. And I'm right in there with her saying, mm-hmm. teaching her and coaching her and helping her. And, you know, so even my nieces are in it now, but that was really the start of, okay, I am going to start this business thing because people at the church, like bridesmaids and groomsmen that were in the wedding, they're like, hey, I'm not Catholic, but I'm engaged and I'm getting married. And like, you made this day so perfect for so-and-so. Mm-hmm. So can you come here and do my wedding? And then that turned into not a wedding, but like a conference and then a number one party. Cause I live in Nashville. So we work with a lot of people that are singers and artists. Mm-hmm. And so then I had like Elegant Weddings by Angela. I don't know what I was thinking, like branding and coaching, because none of that should exist. And then I'm like, well, I'll just have another business, Events by AP, because it's not weddings, but we can do any event. And so my uncle, you know, I'm telling him, and he's like, Angela, you have to get a business license. You have to get insurance. Mm-hmm. How much money are you working with? What are people paying for events down there? And it was very different.
You didn't know anything about pricing or competition. No, you didn't even, you sort of accidentally became an entrepreneur because you had a skill. You enjoyed using it. People responded and they wanted to pay you. And you're like, why the heck not? I mean, that's so awesome.
Yeah. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And someone had told me about SCORE, which was like a free organization, which was like the best thing ever at the time, because I got an 83-year-old mentor, Charlie Redman. He's in heaven now, but he owned all these nursing homes. And in my head, I'm like, what the hell is this man? It's really old man going to teach me. Like, he doesn't know anything about a wedding business. And things were starting to evolve. Like, Pinterest had not been born yet. But people were starting to realize, like, when you have a planner, things are so much easier. And I knew how to be a good planner because you have to plan to have like a good outcome.
Yes.
But I didn't know that really didn't make me happy until almost 10 years later when Pinterest was born. And then people wanted a whole design. So then a designer, they wanted to hire a designer, mm-hmm. which is a completely different service line.
Yes.
And again, I didn't know that until I hired somebody to teach me, you know, how to do it all. So I've been very, I'm constantly seeking professional development. I'm learning. I get a mentor every year. I get myself in a different masterminds every year. Sometimes too many. I've learned to stop that.
Overcommitting is definitely one of them.
Yes.
Overcommitting is definitely something we do.
Yes. With help mm-hmm. and with the right mentors and the right people surrounding me, it has completely changed my life. Like, I was just kind of saying yes to everything for about 10 years. I did get out of healthcare, mm-hmm. but I did live a dual life for a little bit. And I don't even know how I did it. Like, when I think about what I used to do, mm-hmm. I hardly ever slept, but I'm like, God, that was really unhealthy. And it was just,
but it was stimulating as hell though. And I think
totally.
That's so many of us have this tendency to be fueled by our passions. And mm-hmm. when we love something, we become good at it. And when we become good at it, people notice and we get positive feedback, which is very rewarding and stimulating, and we keep doing it. And then more opportunities come our way and more invitations come our way. And I say we have a default yes. It's yes, 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 yes. We don't even think, do I have room for this? Do I have bandwidth for this? Is this even in any way, shape, or form in alignment with my values and my goals? It's yes, yes, yes. And then we feel obligated. So we just do. And then looking back, you're like, oh my God, it's amazing. I didn't just like completely implode because I was pulled in 10 different directions. But I bet you look back on it as a very fulfilling and exciting time in your life, right?
Well, it taught me a lot. And I think back to all of the yeses and like the networking meetings and can I pick your brain and yes to every client, no matter what they needed. It was like, I knew I could help them. And, mm-hmm. you know, then I just started hiring my friends and my family, which was not the best idea for friends. Then my accountant said, let's start an internship program so that actually people started to reach out to me from colleges and they're like, I want to be a wedding planner when I graduate or an event mm-hmm. planner and I'm doing this in hospitality. Like, can I come intern? I'm like, why the fuck do people want to follow me around? Like, I'm working like 24/7. And then mm-hmm. on the weekends at some of these events, like they were large productions. And what you see on TV and what you think it is, it is the most rewarding thing by at like 2 or 3 in the morning when it's over.
Yes, exactly.
And you got through it. But it is hard work. And it's just people don't really respect people in the wedding industry and the creative industry because there are so many hobbyists and there's a major lack of focus in business. And a lot of these people, they're not surrounded by the people that I got the opportunity to be surrounded by. In a friend of mine in 2010, our town flooded. And so I started a productivity company. Again, not my idea. My business manager's like, you're spending way too much time helping people do this. We need to start break it apart and have a separate company. And so I had a bunch of people working with me. And he's like, we really need to start looking at your time. And a friend of mine was an EO, entrepreneur organization. And he's like, Ange, you're going to stroke out before you're 40. You do too much. You work too hard. Like there is a better way. He's like, you've got to join this organization and get rid of all that other shit because I know you're adding value, but what value are you getting for you and your business? And I'm like, well, fuck, I've never thought of that. And so then
Let me stop you for one second, Angela. At that point in time, were most of your advisors men?
Every single one of them are men. Yeah.
Even now?
Yes.
Okay. I got to lean into this for just a minute because as I'm hearing you say this and I'm realizing you and I are like absolutely the same, you know, just say yes to everything because I know I can help, because it's fun to say yes, because I like doing things for people and not having an accurate notion of my actual limitations, just feeling like as long as I feel like doing it, that's a good enough reason to say yes. And then once people are counting on you, even if you want to change your mind, it's too late. You have to do it. I think women maybe don't always give other women the best advice because we're all culturally conditioned to think we can have it all, be it all, do it all at the same time without help. And men don't think like that, do they? Mm-mm. They're like, you're doing too much, girl.
No.
What is this doing? You may be doing a lot for them, but what is this doing for you? And you probably weren't even focused on the money at that point. You were just focused on being of service.
No.
And doing stuff you were good at. Mm-hmm. Was that hard? Was that a hard lesson to learn? Did you struggle with it?
Oh my gosh. It was a huge, hard lesson to learn. But like I'm the oldest of three and my dad was very aggressive. And I mean, in a good way, like you don't do this for this and you work your ass off for this and you treat everybody with respect because you never know who you're talking to. And every single person up to the CEO down to the garbage person, like, I mean, my parents, I'm so thankful. I had good parents that gave me good foundation of treating everyone the same, being nice to everybody and always being helpful. You can always be helpful no matter what. And just being nice to people has gotten me a long way. But
being nice to you, you had to learn though.
Yes. Yeah, I did. But the men, because my dad was such a huge influence just on my life, not so much in business because he didn't really know. You don't know what you don't know. But I think like having a man, because I was so used to my dad being like, God damn it, rah, 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 you know, discipline us, like that doesn't bother me to, and sometimes, and I've had people, and in fact, my mentor, Charlie Redman, he asked me to do a brochure and this was before like flash websites were out. That's like the next big thing we did. But I'm like asking him and he would slam his hand down and like be like, GD, Angela, just listen to me and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, I responded to that. I was like, okay, didn't make me cry. I don't go in like a turtle. And you know what? I will give it right back to you with a smile on my face if you deserve it back. I mean, usually I'm not mentors because they're trying to teach me and train me. But when I was about 30 and I started the other company and I did end up, I finished my terms on all of the event boards. And then I did join the entrepreneur organization and it absolutely changed my life because I finally found my people. Mm-hmm. I finally found other entrepreneurs and I was the stupidest girl in the room. And that's exactly what I wanted. And that's what I needed. I don't need to be the smartest person in the room to make me feel good. I did that for years.
You can't grow. You can't grow if you're already at the top of the heap.
Yeah. And so I just started getting involved with that. And to this day, it's the only thing that I stay part of and stay on the board in different roles. And now I'm active in the regional board, but we have connections and value. And a lot of our clients even have rolled over. And that's not the goal of EO, is to get business and swap business. Mm-hmm, in fact, mm-hmm. they actually discourage it. But by default, end up doing business with each other. And a lot of our clients, we have a level of trust, and I call it potty train your brain. But it's like, I'm a very potty train your brain. I'm very trained as having ADHD. And it's like, sometimes I'm doing it and all my team members know it. And I'm like, if I start to do it, stop me and help keep me on track. And it happens daily.
So when you say potty train your brain, you're referring to like when you go off on a tangent, when you're,
yes.
you hop to the other train and you start going in a different direction.
Fast.
So you empower your team to like rein you in.
Oh, 100%. Oh my God. Without them, I wouldn't be able to do all the things that and all the projects that we are doing. And there's just no way. So I know what they need to be successful, and they know how they can best support me. And it's constantly growing because we continue to grow and hire other people, but it's a culture that we've mm-hmm. created, and even a virtual. Most of my team members, we've been virtual for years. We've got people that work in different countries. You don't have to be in the same place as me. So when the pandemic hit, it's like, oh, no big deal. This is just like another day for us.
You were already in it. Yeah.
Other than, you know, losing a bunch of revenue from events, which we were getting out of anyway to focus more on the productivity company. But I constantly have to have people around me and have an advisory board and mentors and a group, you know, that's helping me. Otherwise, I know that I'm not going to be able to thrive and continue to do what I really want to do. So it's all about, for me, it's like, we hire the right people. People do internships with us. We have our internal processes. Everything's in the cloud. We have our external processes. One thing that being a competitive gymnast and then being a planner in the luxury market, and by the way, I hired people in 2010 once I hired an accountant and a business manager, and they taught me how to actually make a profit because I wasn't. And actually, y'all, we were doing 250 events working with all these people. I wasn't fucking profitable. Okay. And I'm not embarrassed to say it because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But there was always money in the bank, so I wasn't worried about it because I'm not a numbers girl. But then they taught me, they're like, the next 2 years, you're only doing full service. Your goal is going to be 30 clients. And I'm like, what? And then you're splitting your planning and your design apart. You love the design. People mm-hmm. come to you for your design because your brain works so differently. I'll walk into an empty space and my inspiration comes from the client. And so a lot of times, if I can see their home or I can see their pictures, that's what people want to create in a venue, is like a house party. And they want it to be reflective of them. No one else in this industry does that. I know that because I go and I speak all around the world about using psychology to be different and be unique. Mm-hmm. So my favorite is when I was working with a designer in New York, hoity-toity New York, and I'm the girl from Nashville, the little redneck is what he thought. And I'm like, how many of those lamps do you have? And he's like, about 55. I'm like, okay, so we could take those. We could hang them upside down. You could take flowers and greenery. And like, I sketch, I'm not an artist by any means, but like I sketch some things. And he's like, but those are lamps. And I'm like, yeah, they are, but they have cool things coming out of them. And we did, we ended up doing that for the client. But it's like, when people come to us, they know what they're signing up for, like a badass experience of something that no one else is going to have because everything is unique. And it was cool for about 10 years. And we had clients that unlimited budgets, and it seems so fun, but the more money, the more pressure, the more stress for perfection. But then it's like, I created a monster that wasn't scalable, which sucked because you can't really
Well, there's only
teach.
One of you.
Right. And you can't teach design. Like, you either got it or you don't. And so everything else, I hired people, I delegate, I outsource. Again, but we have really buttoned up processes in place, really buttoned up. And we're still
and
not
you don't
perfect.
Create those, I'm guessing, right? You don't create the processes.
I'm a big checklist person. I had to write otherwise I'd fucking forget shit constantly.
Yeah, exactly.
And so in 2010, I mean, I've always been a paperless company. The healthcare EMR, electronic medical records, taught me the power of paperless. So we've always been a paperless company. And so I created, and I'm a tech geek because my computer crashed in college, my car was broken into, my planner was stolen. All this shit happened to me where I'm like, what is this cloud thing? What is this syncing thing? Like, I got to master this because I never want to feel like this again, where I didn't care about my purse and my money or even my card window that had been smashed. All I cared about was my planner because I didn't know what I was going to do the next day.
Do you know what we have? We haven't talked about this yet. We have had the same experience. I had somebody do a smash and grab my planner. I had like a Dooney and Burke bag and the planner was inside the bag and they took the bag. I didn't give two shits about the Dooney and Burke. I didn't care about the window. I didn't care about the fact that it happened in the parking lot of the building where I was working and I was going to continue working where I was renting an office. My planner was my external hard drive. It was literally my brain in pages. It was probably one of the most devastating things that I've experienced because I felt totally helpless. So the cloud is the solution.
Me too. 100%. And so I really nerded out. Like, you know, at the time I'm like, oh, my life is over. This is so bad. But I'm so glad God did it to me in college because it was really setting the foundation of making me understand that if you're going to manage millions and millions of dollars for clients, you better get your shit together. Mm-hmm. And so because of these hard things that happened to me and these lessons, I am very grateful and thankful. Anything still to this day, I'm like, everything happens for a reason. That's okay that, and my team members have accidentally done shit like, a few years ago when G Suite, the business G Suite came out, we had a whole full-fledged wedding B2B YouTube channel. We monetized it, we made money from it. And there was a client and we would set up I would set up G Suite accounts and I'd hired someone and I'm like, have you done this before? And she's like, yes. I'm like, you're comfortable. Yes. I'm like, make sure you log out of our Google account, go into, like we use Chrome, go into Safari, into an incognito window and set up a new account for Ephesus House, which that was our client at the time. And so she forgot to log out. So I start getting all these notifications where our clients, our wedding clients, and our event clients thought my account got hacked because they got this notification that Ephesus House took over ownership of the Google folder, which is where we shared it with all of our clients. And I'm like, what? I was so confused. And I was in a meeting and I really try not to multitask. I try to live in the present moment, be 100% with the client. But I'm like, just excuse me for a minute. I go to the bathroom with my phone. I'm like, what the fuck's happening? And so I texted her and I'm like, did something happen with the Google account? And then I had clients saying I was hacked because what happened, they Googled Ephesus House. If you're not familiar with it, it is a rehab program for men that just came out of prison. And I was on their board and I was the only woman. I helped them set up a Gmail, taught them how to do a resume, taught them how to use the whole Google suite to try to get them acclimated. And once some of the guys that I'm in EO with found out my background with my dad, they're like, we need a woman on the board and you would be great at like all the tech stuff. And listen, those men would take a bullet for me. If anybody tried to mess with me, those men would beat you down. So I'm not afraid of them. Like I was helpful to them, but that was like in my productivity company, which I don't cross over too much. I used to not cross over too much. And I was just like, oh my God, oh my God. I wasn't even thinking about YouTube and all that. I'm like, just let all of our clients know we're aware. It was a mistake. We'll deal with it tonight. But, and I was so pissed because I started to pull apart all, and I'm like, oh my God, we're going to have to get a new G Suite. It can't live. Now I own Ephesus out at gmail.com. Our YouTube channel was changed over. I'm like, I'm going to have to start a new channel.
And you told her right beforehand. It accidentally happened. You knew it was a risk. You did what you could to manage the risk. You gave her specific instructions. Yeah.
She made a mistake, but guess what? It was actually kind of a blessing because it gave us the opportunity to split the productivity and the weddings apart, which I was trying to phase out anyway. You know, so everything happens for a reason. And again, you know, I'm like, I know you didn't do it on purpose, but I can't talk to you for a few days. Like, got to get over it. And I have to find the good in it. And then we'll reconvene on Monday. And she still works with me. Like, and she's awesome. And she's great. But like, humans we all make errors that we don't mean to make sometimes. Like, that is just effing life. And it's all in how you react and how you learn from it. And it makes you a better leader. It really, really does. So it's just, that's where my psychology comes in, where I think of like all the really crazy experiences with some of my patients. And I'm like, okay, it's okay. It could be much worse. No one's on fire. No one's dying. No one's burning down. Like, this isn't horrible. Like, it's not really fixable, because it wasn't, because Google won't let you change your name. YouTube won't do it. And again, this was years ago. I don't even know if they'll let you do it. But now we have an even more button-up process when we start our clients' G Suite accounts. And the same girl still does it, because I know that she will never let that shit happen again.
Absolutely. That's a one-time situation. Ever. And you forgave her. You learned from it. She learned from it.
100%.
She'll never be asleep on the job in the future. I've got to ask you, though, when did you find out that you have ADHD? And did you suspect beforehand? Because something I know from having been a therapist for so many years is, I think there's a lot of people who have ADHD traits, but you don't actually qualify, air quotes, for a diagnosis unless you have the traits and impairment as a result of the traits. And as I know you, I'm like, where's the freaking impairment, right? So how did you figure it out? When did it happen? Give me the deets.
Yeah. When I worked in mental health, and one of the psychiatrists that I was working under, he would notice that I couldn't just take a chart and like finish one patient. So that was like the first thing. And so he's like, are you done with that? And I'm like, no, I'm not done with that one. But I'm going to come back to that. I just had another thought. So I need to write it down in this person. It's like, I need to be doing 10 things at once, or I just don't feel productive. And like my brain is moving so much faster than my hand. And so that was like the first little inkling of it. And then the more that I worked around him, his name is Mitch, Dr. Mitch. He's like, have you ever been tested? And I'm like, you know, as I was growing up, and I asked my mom, my parents had to go to a lot of therapy, a lot, because I was such a strong-willed child. And I would like move from things to things to things, but no doctor ever looked at me and said like, oh, she has ADHD, like let's put her on medication kind of thing.
Did you do well in school, like grade school, elementary school?
I hated school. I have a photographic memory, so I had to use a lot of flashcards. I'm not book smart, I'm street smart. And so, you know, I made good grades kind of to make my parents happy. And you had to keep a B average to be on the team for the gym. So it gave me something to work towards. But I did not like school. That's a whole different story. Like, I learned, if they were like, read this book, I couldn't retain it. But if I was doing it with my hands,
that's right.
And when YouTube came out, like I was a whole different person.
So the doctor you were working with was noticing things like you had to do 10 things at once. I mean, it makes so much sense that you ended up developing a productivity company, because it's one of the things that I think all of us have in common, is that we have this very expansive mind. We have these ridiculously high expectations, and we want to be able to do all the things. So if that means you're doing 10 things at once, that feels completely normal. What else did he notice and point out to you?
Well, that was the first thing. And then the other thing. So I would lead a lot of group therapy, and you would think I'm listening to you because I'm looking at you and I'm shaking my head. But then it's like, I'm not really paying attention sometimes. And I would move from like person to person. He's like, I want you to start with this person and then go around the room. But then if somebody else chimed in, because we would have twice a week, the patients could also chime in. And, you know, I did not create this process. I was super young. I was following their process. Probably not the best idea. But I couldn't remember like where we were and where we left off, and I would lose my train of thought, and I would have my questions in front of me that I had to chart so the insurance would pay their bill. But
you don't remember who said what after a couple of interruptions. It's like, oh crap.
Yes. And it was just all over the place. And then I'm like, okay. And then when you're asking your patients, like, okay, where were we? Who's next? Like, that doesn't look good. So then he's like, you know, I'm going to have to start leading the groups again, because you can't keep up. He's like, I think it's better if you just focus on taking notes, like just focus instead of trying to run everything and take the notes. And listen, I'm wonderful at multitasking, but it's not good for your brain at all. And my attention span was just so short. And so if he would ask me to read something and then, you know, regurgitate or what, like I really couldn't do it, or I didn't retain it and I didn't understand. Mm-hmm. And so the more and more, you know, we worked together and there were traits, he was like, you have ADHD. And he's like, I'm telling you, you have it. And I'm like, okay.
You were in your 20s by that time, right?
I was 20. I was 20 years old. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the more I thought about it, and I would tell my mom, I'm really close to my family, obviously. She's like, oh my God, this makes so much sense. Because you would line up all your toys. I'm a little OCD about cleanliness. Mm-hmm. Yep. And she's like, and if I like touched your stuff or like moved your stuff, or if you were trying to do something and then I took you to do something else, or then we would try to get you to focus. She said I was like the worst kid at the library because I wouldn't sit still. And I always got in trouble at school for talking or interrupting the teacher or... And I constantly wanted to like do things with my hands, build things and, you know, which would make sense because now like I love design and, you know, I love putting things together. But now I love coming up with the ideas and then I hire other people to execute them to free up my time. So, you know, as being an entrepreneur, you go in phases and I find myself about every 3 years, I get really bored. Really bored.
I'm so glad you brought up the B word, Angela, because I always say we treat boredom like a life-threatening condition. And it's the cause of so many behaviors that get us into trouble and why I think 100% of serial entrepreneurs have ADHD, whether they know it or not, because boredom is the enemy. And I remember somebody, I wish I could remember who told me this, that truly successful people are able to tolerate the monotony of success. I'm like, oh, don't tell me that. Sounds so painful. So what do you do when you get bored? Start a new company?
So we grow. We grow. Yes. Like I don't just go start companies to start companies. Like there typically is a need. So when I got out of healthcare and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to focus on weddings and events and only do that. And then we started to pivot and say, we're only doing full service. Well, at the time, this is when TV shows and wedding shows. And so I was doing a lot of production. I was on the road with country artists. And so I was like, and that was like a good 3 year commitment because some of these things that we're planning, they're 15, 18 months out. And I mean, my life just flew by. It seems like, oh, that's a year away. But it just, the older you get, the faster it goes. And so after we wrapped one of our shows and I was like, oh, well, really what happened? One of those places we filmed in Antigua at Jumbie Bay. I had never been to a private island. I didn't even know what it was. I'm like, how am I here? But when I was there, I learned a lot about the Rosewood brand, which is like a step above a Ritz-Carlton. And everything was imperfect, their customer service, everything. But they didn't really have it buttoned up for luxury brides because psychologically, they didn't really know what they didn't know. And so when we left and departed from that wedding, one of the directors said, can I tell you something? You're the first wedding planner we've worked with that is not crazy and you're not bitchy. She's like, can we add you to our preferred list? And I'm like, I don't even know what that is, but sure.
Sure, you don't I'll have come to back ask me twice.
You know, and but I think that they thought I was going to say no because it does sound a little glamorous, like going to private islands all the time. But what you don't know behind the scenes and what you're not thinking of is you have to plan ahead like 90, 100 days ahead. If you don't have your shit to the barge in Miami and it doesn't leave the dock and make it through customs, your stuff doesn't show up. There's no Amazon Prime. There's no Hobby Lobby, Michaels, Walmart, Target, none of that shit. So if it's not there and you don't bring it with you in your luggage, like you can kind of get screwed. And that happened to me. Like some of these flowers did not show up. And so at like 3 a.m, I'm climbing up trees, like cutting shit down, which is kind of illegal there. But
you got to do what you got to do.
Exactly. And it's like, that's, it's not about the flowers, but still like we had to have something on tables. And so, you know, I'm a solutions person. It's my brain is constantly, it's like, okay, something's wrong. Let's fix it. We can do this. We can do that. So they thought that I would never want to come back because some of our stuff got caught in customs. I'm like, oh, I'm not even thinking about that. That was like, so 3 days ago, we're good.
So and 3 days ago, you're like, moving on. Once the problem has been solved, you're not thinking about it anymore.
Absolutely not.
That's part of our magic, I think, because so many people will make a mistake and then they'll freaking obsess and ruminate and replay and self-doubt. And it's like, I have so forgotten about that. Whatever solution we pulled out of our butts and threw at the thing, it's good enough. And now we're on with the next thing. I don't ruminate. I don't even know how. I don't know how.
No,
I don't have time for it. There's too many future focused things I got to get to, right?
Like too much going on in my brain. Yes. So, but what that did for me is I left there and I'm like, I want to own a private island. This is what I want to do because I want to be, and it sounds so flippin' cheesy, but when you can create a culture where people are genuinely happy at what they do to show up every day, and I'm like, I want to get an island and I want it to be the happiest island in the world. And I want people to come there to like renew their vows, go on their honeymoon, do executive retreats with their team for team building. And I had it all planned out in my head. And I started to research, which I'm not a researcher, but that's like right when I got real good at the internet. I think that that's right when I got an iPhone too, because I used to have a BlackBerry. And I changed my whole company over to all Mac products, which was like a whole new world for the creatives. And that December, when I got back, I sat at Apple every day and I took every free class for 30 days. The people thought I worked there. And I learned everything I could so that I could go and train my team on how to be productive with like all these desktops and all these things. And also, again,
that's going hyper focus for you.
But like, it was like all these apps and like things you could do in iMovie and GarageBand and then all the different desktops and how you can organize them. And I was just fascinated by it. And but also, too, I gave it my all because of what happened to me in college, because I knew how powerful it was understanding how to sync and hook everything up. A lot of people, they think they go to the Mac store and they buy a laptop and they walk out and they think your shit's automatically backed up and it's synced and it's in the cloud. No, people, it's not. A few things may be turned on, but as you add to your Apple repertoire over here, if you don't set things up correctly, and if you're, and we're so busy and we're so distracted, we don't take the 5 minutes to watch a YouTube video that tells you exactly what you need to do and, or hire a consultant to like set it up for you the right way on the front end. So I actually started working as a, I would say like a contractor with some of the Apple business program. They're like, can you go out and like teach other people? Because my number one thing is I always need to know the psychology of my audience. Always. And so I did things a little bit differently. I wasn't just a programmer or an analytical person that was going in and I'm like, this is how you do it and you move it and monotone and boring. No, like I wanted to have fun and I wanted to understand my audience and learn how to customize the message the way they needed to hear it. I needed to get them to buy into it, what was important. And in my head and all the assessments I learned in mental health, I'm like, okay, I'll use this assessment. And I need to, you know, profile these people so I can teach them the best way. And then, you know, I would help support them and be there for them. And it would take all their frustrations away. And people kind of hated me the first week. And then after, you know, day 30, it was like I was like their daughter or part of their family because they're like, oh, my God, I showed my kid we could do this and this. And then it just trickled over into our clients too. Like we got all of our clients. I'm like, that's cute that you have a notebook and I'm going to take a picture and put it all in Dropbox. But if somebody stole that notebook, how would you feel?
Mm.
And, you know, people would look at me and they're like, huh? I'm like, don't act like that shit's never going to happen to you because it could, because it's happened to me. So that's fine if you want to carry it around, but just know that you have a security blanket with everything being backed up in the cloud. I'm like, you don't have to do it, but I'm going to show you. It takes 5 minutes. Give me your phone. I'm going to put some free apps on it. And this is how you do it. Now we have tools to video everything. So I send videos with people so they can go back and remember. But typically I have found in doing this over the years, people don't change or make the change or make the time for change until a tragedy happens. So the flood, a fire, something really where you lose your shit in your business. And then it's like, okay, I'm ready. And you know, when I speak, the other thing, I mean, I professionally go and speak on this stuff, but y'all, I have had multiple trainings and coaches a speaker coach for 2 years. I spoke for free because people are like, you're really entertaining in your stories, but like you don't finish your sentences or your thoughts. And like, I can't follow you. And you're exhaust me, you know? And so it's like, I had to have professional training to learn.
Pace yourself and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, and I can talk all day long without slides, but typically when I am presenting, I like to have slides to keep me focused mm-hmm. and to keep my mind. I have to remember, I just vomit everything on everybody because I'm so excited to tell you, but that people can't digest that. And so the other thing, I mean, that was another thing with my speaking coach. He's like, do you have ADHD? It's not like when I hire consultants, I'm like, hi, I'm Angela. I have ADHD. So I need you to fix me. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't say that. And I'm like, yes, I do. And he was like, oh my God, you are so fun, but you're all over the place. And he's like, I got my work cut out for me. And so they made me like video myself and listen to myself. And when I would drive and listen. And so lots and lots and lots of coaching on that. And then I was,
and
then
you
I felt,
take feedback so well, which I got to say, one of the things that most women with brains like ours, Angela, deal with, have you ever heard of rejection sensitive dysphoria?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
As I'm learning, you know, about you, I'm realizing if you ever did have it, you've learned how to manage it, because to be so open to feedback to, I mean, you've had multiple people that you've hired to help you. Dude, you have such ADHD. I never see any defensiveness. I never see, you don't get butthurt. You don't start apologizing, explaining, excusing. You don't feel like a victim. It's like, yep. And that's not to say you don't sometimes feel like called out, but like, how do you feel about it? What does it mean to you? And why don't you feel rejected when you get that feedback? I think a lot of people would be really interested in that.
Yeah. Well, and also too, being an entrepreneur and a female in the tech and productivity, which it's mostly men, you know, there's a few things to that. First, I think being a gymnast, going back to that, and knowing the results that I got as a kid when I listened to my coaches. So that's the first thing is like, I was kind of conditioned already that way. And also too, you know, early on in my first business, when I listened. Now, not that it was easy, you guys, and I always fought. I remember the first time my Andy Bailey, he's like, y'all, I had a pet product company. I had all kinds of shit going on. He's like, what are you doing? He's like, we've got to spend a day and just get all this out. And he's like, what? And so he looked at me and he was like, I want you to track your time. I want to know what you're doing and I want you to color code your calendar.
That so much. Yeah.
And I'm like, and he's like, you're not answering your phone and your text messages. And so he observed some of the things I was doing and saying, and he said, there's a few things you're doing. He said, I don't even know if you know what you're doing because you don't fucking mean it because you complain to me. I'm like, these people were texting me at 2 and 3 in the morning. That is so rude. And he's like, are you texting them back? I'm like, yeah.
Exactly.
He's like, but you also told them at the end of the meeting, anything they need, 24/7, 365 days, you were there for them. Do you realize you're saying that?
Invited that shit.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or even if you did mean it, you shouldn't.
I didn't mean it though, but I was saying it, but I did not mean it. And so we had to, and I mean, big ass whiteboard. And we had the whiteboard and he was like, the first thing with you, we are going to talk about setting expectations with your clients and your business is running you. You are not running a business. You have gotten yourself into a horrible job. And it was bad because I had this reputation of being a robot, which I didn't know until like years later, like all my vendors and stuff, because I could only get my work done at like midnight to like 3 or 4 in the morning. Then I would sleep for 2 hours and get up and like do a bunch of other stuff. So again, not that it was healthy, but it got me, and it wasn't a bad reputation, but I'm a person. I'm not a robot. And I do, you asked me like, how did it make me feel? But also too, because I have this personality about me too, is that when I do get called out, which happens a lot, y'all, I'm not a good speller. Yesterday, oh my God, another podcaster emailed me and he's like, hey, Ange, I just wanted to let you know, I was listening to this episode and it was awesome, but you kept saying this word and I don't think you realize that it doesn't have a G in it. And I know you're from the South and I know you have, you know, he was being funny about it. He's like, but it doesn't have a G in it. So I just want to let you know. And so my assistant's like, why would Clint do that? I'm like, am I saying it wrong? And she was like, yeah, but you say a lot of words wrong. I'm like, then why aren't you fucking telling me? I'm like, if somebody will tell me, I'll fix it. But like, I just laugh at myself.
How do you know she hasn't and you forgot?
I mean, I just kind of make fun of myself. I'm like, you can't be good at everything. And like when I give presentations, even though I have two other people look over it who are super hyper focused and way better at getting shit done than I ever thought about being, then people are like, did you know that you had on slide 53, it was misspelled. I'm like, is that what you got out of my presentation? Thanks for letting me know, but I don't give a shit. Like, I just kind of make fun of myself because
Can't be good at everything.
No. And I've chosen to focus on really specific things that are going to keep the company going from a revenue perspective. Because if I stop and think about it, if I don't work, if I'm not making money, if I'm not speaking and promoting things, there's a lot of people that are going to be affected that I can't pay. And that's going to really impact their family and their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And I don't want, but I don't ever think about that. I don't. But I'm typically the one out there driving the sales for all of the companies because I enjoy.
You're the personality and you're the face of the business and you're charming and charismatic.
Thanks.
And you are. And, you know, but you're right. That shit isn't scalable.
You got to know your role. No. And so that's
unless the cloning gets, you know, I wrote a blog post about that, you know, fucking Dolly.
Oh, like she was supposed to be. Yes.
Dude, she was supposed to be my answer to multitasking. Yes. Oh, multitasking isn't good for you. Fuck you. I'm going to get a bunch of sheep. I'm going to clone myself.
Yep.
Didn't work.
Yep.
But
I don't know if I'll ever see it in my lifetime, but like what I did learn, there were two things that really changed too. And so I got on the private island, just circuit and traveled for a couple years. And then, you know, kind of got tired of that. And then I was like, let's go to other countries. And then I got started, asked to speak, you know, a lot of different places. And so I started hiring more people. And then as I slowly started to remove myself from the event business, like I just went in, I would sell the design. And then, but I knew the outcome that if I took the time to create the process and to teach everyone with everything in the cloud, they can handle the process and put it all in because it's just a strategy and a process. Mm-hmm. It's not rocket science. And once you know all the knowledge and the vendors and the communicator, who needs what, they don't need me anymore.
No. So then you can remove yourself and go on to your next adventure.
Yes. And so it became a little bit better, but then I was introduced to online courses and e-commerce and affiliate marketing. I went to a conference with a friend who's like, you work way too freaking hard, girl. You got to get into the world of passive income. And I'm like, what's that? Mm-hmm. So then I started to learn how to do some of those things. And let me just say this. I hired people to do it for me because we could afford it.
To create your course.
I did. Mm-hmm. I've been through 6 consultants who were all word of mouth. I'm not the Google girl. I asked my friends, who's the best? Mm-hmm. Who does what? They were all word of mouth for different reasons. Every single one of those people, I thought for a while, they screwed me every which way. And I mean, I could just go on and on. One day I'm going to write a book about it. I don't think they intentionally did it. They were just, they didn't know what they didn't know. And I moved so fast that they couldn't keep up. But there were a few things like, and two, and they were, one of them was a woman, the rest were guys. Two of them were running because we had different funnels, money coming from different places. I don't really pay attention as long as it's in the bank and my accountant caught it. And he's like, there should be your dashboard says this was sales, but it's not in the bank. And so then I go ask the guy and he's like, oh my gosh. And they all have a lot of clients. And he's like, I accidentally routed that to something else. And I'm like, oh, how did you fucking accidentally reroute? I was like,
your
do you know
course
how many
sales were routed somewhere else?
One of our funnels, yeah.
Not any part of your business? Like,
it
outside?
Was into his bank account. He was stealing. Okay, let's just be honest.
Oh,
and then he tried to play dumb. And I'm like, I know I'm a blonde, but I'm not a dumb blonde. And you cross me and I am fun and I smile and I laugh and I like to have a good time. But you lie to me one time, that will never happen again. And you are done.
Right.
So we changed all of our passwords. Then the next consultant I got was even better, where he was accidentally using my credit card on I understand Facebook Business Manager now, but the whole point to the story is these kind of bad things happened to me where people were stealing from me. He was accidentally using my credit card for other people's ads.
Accidentally. Fascinating.
Yes. And I'm like, these men. And I'm like, you're a fucking liar. And so then after number six, I got so sick of it. And I had two poor girls in house with me. And I said, you know what? We are not taking any more clients right now. And the three of us, we are going to sit down and learn how to do this shit because I'm tired of it. And there are people making eight figures with an online course. And I had joined a new mastermind where all these people, it was my first time, they only ran one funnel. And they were all $1 million plus funnels. And I'm like, are you guys lazy? Like one funnel? But I was the idiot. So I started to learn the techniques. Of focus, beta groups and and tweak and fix. I learned about A/B split testing. And I don't know if I would have gotten so into it and submerged myself in it if I had not been taken advantage of and lied to. So listen, I'm not mad. I'm glad
they did.
Live
and learn, baby.
Yeah. My first webinar, the guy that built it all, y'all, we probably had about 60 grand sunk into like the whole big thing. And that was going to be like our big thing for the upcoming year. And it was B2B in the wedding space. And it went great. There were hundreds of people there. People were clicking. All the links were dead. I had someone email me and say, hey, I'm trying to get this course and it's not working. So I texted, his name is Clint. And he literally said to me, oh, I forgot to test them. You'll have to tell my wife to kick me in the balls for that. Literally. So he admitted to doing it. And I'm like, do you know that this cost me about $350,000 in revenue? Like,
not only all the Facebook ads, you must, I mean, oh my God. It makes me sick.
So that was another final thing where I'm like, well, I guess we're going to be doing our own webinars and our own. So all these things kept happening to me. So we learned how to do the Facebook ads. There were three women learning how to do all this, going to conferences, reading, they read, I watched videos. But then like one would take care of the analytics. One would like be the project manager, making sure that we were all GSDing on time, getting the shit done. I did all the design. So I learned how to build websites, landing pages. I learned ClickFunnels. I learned lead pages. I learned Kajabi. I learned all this stuff. And I hired a copywriter to like do the conversion sales copy because like, again, I'm no copywriter. I got ADHD. I can't even finish a fucking sentence, much less write copy that's going to convert. I'll do the videos and you give me a little bit of a script so I don't go off script, but like I can follow directions. And so that was
You just figure shit out though. I mean, that's why like your company, GSD, getting shit done, it's brilliant because you don't want to do anything but the stuff you're really good at. But if you hire people that are either incompetent or unethical or God help us both, you're like, fuck this shit. And you learn 100%. It. You have learned so many things you should have never had to learn because you were spending your hard-earned money on people who were supposedly experts. But at the end of the day, I'm with you. Lie to me once, shame on you. Lie to me twice, I am going to say shame on me because that's not going to happen. Like you probably have really good instincts and intuition about people and sometimes they slip by.
Yeah.
Now you, we acquire these things the hard way, I guess. So what's up next for you?
Like the radar is on.
Yeah. You've already accomplished so many things. Say, yeah. Like what's up next? What's the future going to hold for you? What's your next big thing?
Well, right now, like with all that to say, everything happens for a reason. And so when the pandemic started for us, we were like, okay, in-person events, which we were phasing out anyway. We learned how to build on a few digital platforms, which I really was involved with VR when VR came out a few years ago for virtual reality. Mm-hmm. And so I've built in 3D. Again, it's all design and there's a lot of moving parts. So we learned how to do that. And so we have a few digital conferences we'll continue to do for the right client. But really, I'm glad that all those things happened to me because now I know the detail that needs to be done. And so a lot of my friends in EO came to me when the pandemic started. They had to let their marketing teams go, their content creation teams go, but they knew that I knew what I was doing because I was doing it for my own brand and multiple companies that I oversee. And so it brought us another stream of revenue where
you're now teaching it to people that are just going online now.
Well, now like we have one funnel. GST Academy. Yes. And we've had only one funnel for 3 years, and we perfect it and we change it based on all the user data and all the, I ask for feedback and we take surveys. I want the feedback because I want to make it better. I want, especially women, like, don't be afraid of technology. Like, you can do it and you can learn. Like, I have to time block, and that's how I live and I am able to accomplish so much, is because if it's not on my calendar, it doesn't exist. So, and like, we will block out, you know, chunks and chunks. Right now, like, next week, we are part of a podcasting event. It's a 2-week event. It's a big digital event.
Yeah, I'm going to be there. Thanks for the discount on the ticket.
400 plus speakers, 10,000 plus people from all around the world, 10 plus languages. So, you know, I knew that was coming up. We completely blocked the calendar unless something absolutely had to be done. I'm like, no, I'm going to attend every, I mean, I'm speaking at it, but I want to attend every session that I can. I want my assistant to attend with me so she can learn, because we're doing a new YouTube series. So it's like, I really have learned how to delegate so that I can be present. And y'all, it doesn't happen overnight. But really for us, what's next is, you know, we continue, our main source is GSD Academy. And we really build relationships with people like yourself that we're doing podcasts with, people that I meet at other speakers. They also have courses or books. And we know that each other's stuff is very impactful for our community. And so we really focus on those relationships, affiliate marketing, and doing GSD Academy. That is the foundation. But what's next? Like, we're working on a book, The Profitable Shift. And so I talk a lot. And taking all my notes and all the productivity tips and everything. And actually, you know, I have 9 books that we've done. We do a book every year at the end of the year, but this one will be different, where we actually have a publisher, and then we have a, you know, a speaking tour where we'll go and speak and give the book. And I never really did that before, you know, with the others. And some of them now, I update them every year. We use them as lead magnets, and some of them are ebooks, and, you know, we'll give them away for free to capture people's phone numbers and emails. We want to give a ton of value before people buy anything.
Invest
from
in
us.
You. Absolutely.
Yeah. Cause we want them to know. The big thing with productivity is, if you don't put in the effort to actually make the change to equal the result, it's not going to work. So I don't want your money. I don't need your money.
No.
I only want you to invest in it. And really,
they're not investing in you. They're investing in themselves. And I think they have to get to the point where they realize that.
Yes. You know,
it makes me crazy with all the people that say, I just want you to tell me the perfect tool, the perfect planner, the perfect app. I'm like, honey. Darling, the one that will be perfect is the one you will use. You won't cheat on it. You won't look for its replacement. You commit to it and you keep practicing until it's second nature and you can't imagine your life without it. That's what makes it perfect. Any one of them will do that. And that's such a hard lesson. It's so hard. I mean, you had to learn it. I had to learn it. And people have to be in the right place before we can teach it to them, because everybody's searching for the perfect thing. And there's plenty of unethical marketers who are willing to sell them, right?
Oh, I mean, God.
We could go on for another hour on that.
I learned that.
Let's not. So we're going to put in the show notes, because you brought up a couple of important organizations that I think people need to know about, EO, Entrepreneur Organization, and also SCORE. I think people need to know about those. And please, please, Angela, promise, once the book is launched, you're going to come back and talk about it, because it's the profitable shift. Like, I think, unfortunately, those of us who are so passion driven and want to help people, sometimes we not only put ourselves on the bottom of the priority list, we put profit there too. You had to learn it the hard way. I had to learn it the hard way. I know that's what the book is about. So you're going to come back and we're going to talk about that in detail. Deal?
You got it. You got it. This is so much fun. I could talk
to
you for
days. Thank you so much. I know, dude. This is the longest interview I've done so far, and I feel like I could keep on going.
Oh,
but, all of our audience has ADHD too. In fact, some of them are probably going to have to break this up into 2 or 3 listening periods. But
part one, part two.
Guys, you can see why I adore this woman. So until we meet again, my friend.
So much fun.
Thank you.
Bye, y'all.
Bye for now.
Hey, it's Diane. Can I be honest with you? At the beginning of each new year, I always told myself, This is the year I'm going to get my habits dialed in. This is the year I'm going to be crystal clear about my goals and I'm going to crush them. This is the year I'm going to get my shit together on every level and I'm going to do it all by myself. Been there, done that, got a whole stack of t-shirts. But you know, it wasn't until I started working with my own coach that I realized what a difference it makes to have guidance, support, and accountability from someone who's not only like-minded, but like-brained. Yeah, I'm talking about another driven woman, entrepreneur, who also has ADHD and has got it going on. I have two openings in my signature one-on-one 12-week coaching program, and one of them might have your name on it. There's a link to a free consult with me in the show notes if you think this might be the year that you really get serious and go all in on an ADHD-friendly business and life. While you're thinking about that, have a listen to what one of my client's success stories has to say about the difference it made to work with me.
It's funny because at first I said I would never own my own practice. And now I own my own practice. And I would say, I'm never going to take it any more than just treating patients. Now I'm thinking about how can I start my own
institute. You know,
yeah, exactly. Even like training other therapists, having a certification with my name that I am, you know, I haven't thought of the name yet, but I'm certified in this technique or whatever the case may be. And really just helping other therapists help their patients the way I help mine.
You've been listening to the Driven Woman Podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to the Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.